mind turns on the light. On page 497 of the textbook, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy, she indicates a list of 6 topics which are the important points of Christian Science. And the very first one is, as adherents of truth, we take the inspired word of the Bible as our sufficient guide to eternal life. In looking at the Bible for the very first unfoldment in what is known as the spiritual record of creation, the first day, which means the very beginning, says, "And God said, let there be light, and there was light. And God saw the light that it was good. And God divided the light from the darkness. And God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And the evening and the morning were the first day." The very first thing anyone will read if they start at the beginning of the Bible is what was just read. We cannot see, which means we cannot perceive, which means we cannot tell the difference between one thing and another, unless the light is on. This is exactly what Christian Science does. It turns on the light so we can see the spiritual sense of the Bible. And there is a very methodical, systematic, scientific way to do that. This is what Mary Baker Eddy says on page 146. "Divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system, to a form comprehensible by and adapted to the thought of the age in which we live. This system enables the learner to demonstrate the divine principle upon which Jesus' healing was based, and the sacred rules for its present application to the cure of disease." Now think of disease as exactly what the word says. Dis-ease. Any discord, under any name whatsoever, whether it's an event that is in trouble, whether it is a relationship, whether it's the thought about yourself, about an individual, about God, about anyone or anything at any time, under any circumstance. If there is not complete harmony, then it is a dis-ease and it can be healed. It doesn't matter if it is a nuclear war between every country in the world. It can be solved through the system of divine metaphysics. On page 330, she states the following. "When the 32 planks of the platform is understood, and the letter and the spirit bear witness, the infallibility of divine metaphysics will be demonstrated." Now she gives all the details in the following 11 pages. There is not another religion in the world that even comes close to focusing on healing, let alone giving you a structured system of how to accomplish it. This is what Einstein said about Christian Science and the system of divine metaphysics. "Science without religion is lame, and religion without science is blind." Blessed art thou, for everything that is in this book. Imagine, a woman discovered this 80 years ago. If Christian Science is studied in a scientific and systematic manner, it is effective in healing. Dr. Albert Einstein is listed as one of our authors on the website. And you may be interested in reading other things that he has to say. His friend, by the name of Dr. Underwood, was on the Atomic Energy Commission for America, and everyone on that commission doing research passed on as a result of radiation. His friend, Dr. Underwood, was the only one that survived. And when Einstein asked his friend, "Well, how is it that everyone else passed on and you didn't?" he said, "I am a student of Mary Baker Eddy and her discovery called Christian Science." From then on, Einstein took a very serious approach and studied it thoroughly, even attended church and utilized the reading room. The reading room is a library that each church is supposed to have, where you can go in there in a very quiet atmosphere and you have all the resources and you can study. Obviously, if you have facilities to study at home and have all the resources, you don't need to use the reading room. Frederick L. Rawson saw so much light that he discovered how to heal back in time. In other words, if you have had an illness for the last 10 years, he could heal it effective immediately after you discovered you had the problem. And the entire memory of 10 years of suffering would have been erased from your memory as well as everyone else that was aware of your problem. He said that they used to teach in school that there was no time. Time was only an imagination. It was not anything factual that really existed. He was an expert in electricity, and people came from all over the world to consult with him to solve electrical problems for their companies. Now, this was back over 100 years ago, so travel was very arduous and time-consuming. If you were on the other side of the earth, it could take you a month to get to see him and another month to get back, because there was not international telephone available, and it couldn't be done by telegram. But many practitioners have overcome the belief of space because they typically work out of their office and often do not have the patient come to the office. Some of them have an office in their home. Basically, all communication in the last 50 or 75 years has been by telephone. Mr. Rawson was so advanced that he wrote a book called Treatment or Healing by True Prayer, and it is an encyclopedia in alphabetical order that lists 1,315 different ailments and the solution through using Christian Science. Mary Baker Eddy states that the first step we need to do is find out what is the evil that is involved in creating the appearance of a problem. And the second step is to utilize the exact truth that addresses that form of evil. And Mary Baker Eddy defines evil as anything that is unlike God. So he's done a tremendous amount of research to give us that beautiful product of his in-depth understanding of Christian Science. His typical method of operating was to have 15-minute appointments. And at the end of 15 minutes, the healing was usually accomplished. Otherwise, it would be the beginning, and maybe there was something that the individual needed to do. For example, a mining engineer came in to see him, and he was out of work, out of money, and he had a debt at the bank that he didn't have any idea how he could pay. And after he spent 15 minutes with Mr. Rawson, and he was walking away from the office, he realized that he had a letter in his very coat jacket pocket that was an introduction to someone that was very well known in the mining industry. And he knew where the fellow was located. So he went over to his office and he showed him the letter. And the fellow recognized who had made the recommendation for this mining engineer immediately, because he was a very well-known man in the industry. And he said, "I'm so glad you came, because we have an immediate position that needs to be filled. And based on this letter of recommendation, you have all the qualifications to do it." Now, he had been carrying that letter around for several years, 2 or 3 years, he said, but it never occurred to him to go and see that individual. He had just routinely been changing it from jacket to jacket so that he would always have it with him, but the thought didn't occur to him. The light hadn't been turned on. His visit with Frederick L. Rawson turned on the light. So often we have the solution right in front of us, but we don't recognize it. When I was in business, several times I had a position that I couldn't seem to fill. And later, after I went through a very difficult time of interviewing and filtering out the ones that weren't qualified and so forth, I'd finally come up with a solution. And several times later, I realized that I knew somebody that could have filled that position, someone that I'd known for several years. That happened at least 3 times I can think of. The light was not turned on in my consciousness or anyone else that was on my staff. The solution was there. Now, to be frank, no one else on the staff would know about these people because they were longtime friends of mine. But I knew they would be qualified because I knew them very well. There was a professor one time that walked into his classroom and he hung up a large white sheet across the viewing area. It had a very small black dot right in the middle. He asked the students what they saw. They thought he was crazy. We see a big white sheet. What do you expect we're going to see? He said, look carefully. They finally realized there was a black dot right in the middle, very small. He said, oh, we know what you want us to see, that black dot. He said, that's exactly what I don't want you to focus on. He said, most people will focus on the black dot and they will miss the big picture. Never let a little problem blind you to the big picture. Wentworth Winslow, a very fine Christian Science practitioner, just like Frederick L. Rawson, up there at the top of the success stories. He wrote an article called The Bicycle and the Brick. He said that if you're riding down the street on a bicycle, and this was in almost 100 years ago, where bicycles were very common. He said, if you're riding down the road on a bicycle and there's a brick in the road, he said, most people will focus on the brick and run right into it. He said, you better look at the big picture. Where are you going? Are you going exactly where that brick is? Well, then you better stop before you get there. Because if your choice is to run into the brick or not on a bicycle, you better not do it. Most people are attracted to distractions instead of where they really want to go. If one studies time management, one of the things that you learn is to assign a priority or a value to each one of the projects that you need to do and determine the priority based on the value. And when you start work the first thing every day, if it's work projects, you immediately start the highest value project. If your desk was left in a mess the night before, no, don't spend 30 minutes or an hour or whatever it takes to clean up all the details or make phone calls of all these little things that you need to make phone calls about, or writing notes about all these little things you need to write notes about. You start working on the highest value project. Now, there's other factors that come into play, such as some may be time sensitive and some may not be, and so forth. But as a general rule, you start with the highest value project. and you don't let anything distract you from working on the highest value project. And if you assign too low of a value to something, you may want to not even do it at all, because your time may be determined to be too valuable to be spending it on doing it. And if you can't delegate it, you may just discard it. But you never devote your prime time and your highest priority to cleaning up little things. Mary Baker Eddy said, "The difference between success and failure is more often than not attributed to how you use your moments." Now, a moment is defined as the smallest measurement of time. It is not defined by mathematical calculations or by the clock. No, it is a word. It is not a mathematical expression. The smallest segment of time. We have a large number of them every day. You need to walk somewhere to get a drink of water. Maybe a drinking fountain at work. Walking there are moments that you could use. You could think about something productive. Walking back, the same thing. And while you're taking the drink, such a routine thing, you could be thinking about something productive, constructive, something that would add to the value of yourself. Mary Baker Eddy prayed 3 times a day for the benefit of all humanity. And she prayed every hour for herself, a short prayer, to make sure that she was only thinking good about everything and everyone. In other words, no hard feelings about something, no criticism, no condemnation, resentment, revenge, or anything negative at all about anyone else. She wrote a letter called The Secret. It's on the website. And it says that whenever she had her frame of mind such that there was nothing negative about anyone or anything, that she could heal any situation that she was facing instantaneously. There's the value in watching our thinking as well as our speech and actions all the time. Wentworth Winslow also had 15-minute appointments. Joel Goldsmith is another one, 15-minute appointments. At the end of 15 minutes, the healing was over. Joel Goldsmith walked into the Benevolent Association, which is a nursing home for Christian Scientists. They don't use any medicine, but it's, you know, giving care, and everyone there is required to have a practitioner working on their case for healing. And he was called by one of the people who had a problem. And so he decided to visit them. And when he walked into the place, the receptionist said, "You don't want to go in there." He said, "Everyone has the same problem and it's contagious." I don't know, probably something like the flu or something like that, I suppose. I don't believe it named it. But anyway, he said, "Why not?" He said, "There's only one problem." She said, "Well, you know, we've got, I don't know what it was, 100 or 200 people that were there as patients. He said, well, it's only one problem. He healed it in a few minutes. Everyone was healed in a few minutes. He didn't see it as a big overwhelming problem with 100 or 200 different problems. So he healed the belief of the one problem and it healed everybody. Bicknell Young drowned. And after he drowned, he was conscious of what was going on. And he could see people on the shore mourning him. He had a choice to make. He had to decide whether he wanted to pass on or come back alive. He decided he could do many more things. So he snapped out of it and came back to life. Once one gets an appreciation for what the definition of God really means, and that the scientific statement of being makes it very clear that there's no life, truth, and intelligence in matter or anything else that is unlike God, then the possibilities of healing are infinite. Everything is possible to God. It's not you, it's not me, it's not a practitioner. It is the fact, the rule, the law of God that is effective and working. Truth is a synonymous term for God that is the healer. Mind is the medicine. We have to have the right thought about it. There are many ways to turn on the light, but they all center around what is God and what is man, what is real and what is unreal. The reason Frederick L. Rawson was able to heal back in time was because he understood that time was fiction. It wasn't fact. Einstein said, when asked, how do you describe relativity? You know, his first famous formula was about relativity, E equal mc squared, which was considering the speed of light and mass and the relationship. And he said, imagine yourself being with someone that was very pleasant to have a conversation with. He said, the time will fly by very fast. And he said, compare that to you're working on a project that is very difficult and you're struggling with finding the solution and it's like time doesn't move at all. You're stuck. He said, that's relativity. You see, the time is dependent upon what your concept is of time. It's not dependent upon anything else. Here are some thoughts on how we can be enlightened. One, is reading the second quote at the beginning of the textbook from Shakespeare, who states, "There's nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so." That is a big clue that we need to, first of all, address our thinking. How are we thinking about something? Are we afraid? That means we're ignorant. That means we don't understand what is going on. Otherwise, we wouldn't fear. The truth is, there is one God that is the only power that exists. And as we get a more clear understanding of that, we get a less occupation in our thought of fear. Because we'll realize that no matter what is going on, if God is the only power, then it could not have any power over us or anyone else. Since God is divine principle and divine principle is harmony, is an accident real or unreal? Nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. Are we going to give power to an accident? Or are we going to devote our thought to God and mind? A familiar phrase used by Christian Scientists is, there are no accidents in divine mind. So if we raise our thought to a divine mind level, we can not only erase the accident from our thought, but all of the so-called material aspects of that accident could fall into place instantaneously. What is the definition of God? On page 465, Mary Baker Eddy states, God is incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. On page 587, God is the great I am, all knowing, all seeing, all acting, all wise, all loving, and eternal. Principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, love. All substance, intelligence. On the same page, she defines good. God, spirit, omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, omniaction. Now, what is mind? She defines mind as being all creative force, all creativity, all capacity, all capability, all functionality, all facility, and as already mentioned, all action. So if you put creative ability with capacity, capability, functionality, action, facility, and realize that the only substance is spirit, then there is no impossibility in the dictionary. Just erase it from memory, because it doesn't exist. Everything is possible to God, because God is the only power. God is the only intelligence, the only knowing, the only wisdom. That's what omniscience is. It's intelligence, wisdom, and knowing. And everything with God is omni, which means the one, only, and all. There's no competition. There's no opposition. It's the only thing that exists. If all capacity is from God, and all capability, all functionality, all facility, all action, how could we be deficient or incapable in doing anything? If we will yield a limited personal sense of ourselves, then we have a whole new dimension of opportunity. That is called enlightenment. We've turned on the light. How about Mr. Rawson discovering how to heal back in time? 500 times he proved it. 500 different cases. In fact, he said over 500. All the details are on the website under his name, Rawson, R-A-W-S-O-N. How about the definition of spirit? Spirit is flawless. It's transparent because it is flawless. And it is reflective because it is flawless and transparent. Do we have a problem with a piece of matter? All we have to do is enlighten ourselves that there is no such thing as matter. The scientific statement of being is very useful. It says there's no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in matter. All is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation. I had a growth above my right eye to believe, and I ignored it in the beginning. And it started growing. And that's exactly what happens when you ignore evil. It will grow. So when I realized that it wasn't going down, but it was growing, I decided to do something about it. And what I did is every time I used the restroom, everyone in our family always washed their hands before they would eat. So I was in there at least two or three times a day for that. Might be in there for other things. I took at least a shower a day in hot, humid weather. If I happen to be in that climate, I might take one twice a day. Whenever I was in the bathroom, I would state emphatically the scientific statement of being, and I would substitute the problem for the word matter. There is no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in the belief of a growth above my right eye. All is infinite mind and is infinite manifestation, for God is all in all. Spirit is immortal truth. The belief of any abnormal growth above my right eye is mortal error. Spirit is the real and eternal. A belief of an abnormal growth above my right eye is unreal and temporal. Spirit is God. And I am God's image and likeness. Just as it states in Genesis chapter 1. I am God's image and likeness. There's no defects in God. And therefore there can be no defects in His image and likeness, of which I am. And everyone is. Man is not material. I'm an individual manifestation of man. Therefore, I am not material. Man is spiritual. Therefore, I am spiritual. Because I am an individual manifestation of spirit. I talked to myself like that every time I went in the restroom. I never thought about it any other time. It's like the thought came to me that I needed to treat it when I went to the restroom. And I thought that would be a good way to use the moments while I was in there. It didn't matter why I was in there. It could be washing my hands, getting ready to eat. It could be anything, taking a shower, whatever. That's exactly what I did every single time. Within a few days, instead of growing, it disappeared. It disappeared. And I never looked at it. I never look in the mirror, really. Well, when I shave, that's it. But that's looking at what I'm doing. You know, looking at my lower part of my face. I purposely did not look anywhere else. I focused on what I was doing. And what I'm doing is not checking to see if there's improvement. Because that means that it's in the forefront of our thought. If we're going to do that, don't expect the healing. Because we're focusing on the problem. Einstein says, if you want to solve a problem, you have to deal with it from a level above where the problem appeared to you. Perfect words for anyone to listen to. You have a problem? You have to raise your thought above the level where you discovered the problem. You can't deal with a problem on the same level as where the problem is. Otherwise, you are dealing with mortal mind instead of letting divine mind light up your consciousness with the truth. That's what we want to do. That's what we need to do. And that's what we must do to heal. We can't be dealing with mortal mind. We have to deal with the truth. The truth is the solution. That's the healer. Mortal mind is the trouble. That's the problem. That's not the solution. Mary Baker Eddy labels mind, divine mind, as the medicine. And truth as the healer. So think about Shakespeare. Nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. We have to put the right thoughts into consciousness. And that activates the truth. You see, all of these synonyms work together. Mind doesn't work by itself. Just like the number one doesn't work by itself. It has to be applied to an object. I have one of these. I have three of these. I have four of these. I add them all up, and I've got eight objects. So you're the clerk. at a car rental agency, and a company calls you up and they say, we're coming in town with a staff and we need 7 vehicles. Well, you look at your inventory and you say, no problem, we've got you covered. We have to utilize the correct thought to heal the problem. If we have a headache, we don't use a solution for a broken arm. Unless maybe the broken arm is supposedly causing the headache. Because evil is very deceptive. And it will come to us in a form that deceives what the real problem is. We're living at a great time in human history because evil is so obvious in the way it is operating. The corruption is so obvious when we look at it. For example, evil always accuses the innocent of what it, the evil itself, is doing. Evil is a miserable character, so it will accuse the innocent of being an evil character. It will make up lies. We have a recording, it's on the website, of the one that was running Congress. And that individual created a lie and then gave it to the media. They published it, and then that individual that created the lie used the media as their reason for stating it as being true. One of our largest intelligence agencies, in fact, it is the largest, they teach their staff how to lie, cheat, and steal. You think I'm kidding? The director, we have a video of the director on our website that makes that very same statement. And he laughs about it. He was talking before the graduating class of one of the military academies. He graduated number one in his class in the military. And he's talking before the commencement exercises of one of the military. You know, the cadets of becoming officers, they're graduating from the academy. And he said, yes, our motto is, in the academy, to don't lie, cheat, steal, and don't tolerate anybody that does. He said, but in this agency I'm in, we teach people how to do exactly what you are supposed to not do. And they all laughed. But the truth is, it was tragic. It wasn't funny, it was tragic. We have it on video. We have the one that was running the Congress on video stating that they fabricated a lie and they gave it to the media and they used that as their reason for stating it. They were wiping out the character of an individual that had a very good character, very good reputation. They have a program, that same agency has a program called Project Mockingbird. This is on our website. In fact, you can use a search engine. I wouldn't recommend Google because it's very corrupt, so you may not find it there, but you will find it on Yandex, Y-A-N-D-E-X. We have a link at the bottom of every page of our website where you can go directly to Yandex. And they don't censor anything. And the motive in this Project Mockingbird was to reverse the truth. And they said that when everyone in America believed a lie to be the truth, then they will have accomplished their goal. It's the same agency that said we teach people how to lie, cheat, and steal. They were teaching the public how to believe a lie to be true. That's why it's such a beautiful time to be alive, because we can see firsthand how evil operates. Reading it in a book is one thing, but seeing it in practice is another. Because you see, because of the internet, we can actually go and do research on the individual that they are trying to destroy the reputation of. The former president has been convicted of, I don't know how many, 30 or some crimes. And every single one of them was based on false information. And so the military arrested the judge and the whole jury because they violated their oath. The facts are out there of what the truth is. And so they're being executed. Put to death. In fact, most of them have already been. Because they take an oath when they're a judge. And when they're on a jury, they take an oath to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth. And the judge says they will uphold the Constitution. They totally violated everything. They committed treason against America. Treason against their oath. So they lost their life. That's the penalty for treason, is death. Yeah, many Supreme Court judges, two Supreme Court judges, had the same experience. State Supreme Courts and juries, same thing. Appeals court, attorneys, tons of attorneys. This pandemic thing was all fraud. They arrested 950 medical doctors in one day. They did a sting operation. And these medical doctors were telling lies to their patients. And they were putting them on a blacklist so they couldn't even get medical insurance. You know, Christian Scientists don't use it or need it or want it. But these guys were not Christian Scientists. They depended on medical insurance. And they fixed it so they couldn't even get medical insurance because they would not accept taking the vaccine or wearing a mask. So the military picked up all these doctors, 950 of them, that were involved in one area. One day, they swooped them up. Evil, well, they were all being blackmailed. They paid them under the table to do this. The drug companies paid the doctors to lie. And as a result, they're giving up their life. They thought it would be fun. They thought they would make some money on it. They've discovered that everyone in Congress except for one individual, took money under the table from lobbyists. And then they were supposed to pass laws that would be favorable to the business that that company was in. I mean, we because of the internet, we can find out the truth. Because there are some people out there that are telling the truth. In fact, the former president, well, he's always been the president for, 8 years now, because he's under a special rule. Anyway, he started a social media company, and he calls it Truth Social. Because he's one of the few that's telling the truth. This is really fun, seeing how evil operates. And it always fails if we carry it out to a long enough timeline. They have over 300,000 sealed indictments where they've already got the proof that these people are guilty, and they don't have the prison space to keep them. So they're planning to build much, much larger prisons or process the executions faster, one or the other. We have all the tools in Christian Science. Mary Baker Eddy gave us a system with specific structure. And we teach you in these prayer treatments the system and the structure so that you can learn how to heal anything. We give you very specific instructions. And if you will follow them, you will be able to heal anything. It's not magic. Mathematics is not magic. Music is not magic. Chemistry is not magic. Physics is not magic. Rocket science is not magic. Being a homemaker is not magic. Driving a car is not magic. Everything operates by a system and a structure, which is principle. Everything in your life, whether you do it automatically and are not even aware of it, because it's just automatic. I mean, you don't think about putting one foot in front of the other when you walk. It's automatic. If you really learn the keyboard on a computer, you can type very fast and you don't think about the keys. You just whip it out automatically. I mean, I've had so many hours on the computer that I can type very quickly. I don't think about the keys. I don't think about the spelling or anything else. It just happens. Healing can happen instantaneously if we are in alignment with the truth. I will tell you a few things that are very critical for you to understand if you want to be successful in living a life of a true blue Christian Scientist, living in the system of divine metaphysics, a whole dimension above what most people ever dreamed was possible. And it's available. It's right at the fingertips. All you have to do is do it. Number one, you have to have the right attitude. John Morgan, very advanced Christian Scientist, he says you cannot even learn about what the definition of God is unless you have the right attitude. He said you have to be exhausted with trying various other remedies for whatever your problem is and have given up because you don't find a solution anywhere else. And when you're at that point, then you are ready to listen to the truth about what God is. Not some theory, but the truth. You have to gain the confidence that this is going to work. And one of the tools you can use is the last chapter of the textbook. 101 pages, 85 different people testifying to 486 different healings. So each one of them, had multiple healings. They were probably looking to heal one thing, and all of these other problems they had automatically were healed because they were in alignment with truth. They were living the Christ consciousness. They were putting into their consciousness the correct facts, and they were blocking fiction. They were blocking fake news. They were blocking the material history that says that they were born a sinner and they will always have trouble. Instead of watching an ad or reading a billboard of an ad about how you need to take this cough medicine or this or that or whatever to heal a problem, they would immediately reverse what the medical profession was saying and state to themselves, to reinforce it in their own consciousness, the facts about what God is and that God is the only power. And they were going to rely on the power of God instead of on an advertisement for a solution. The beauty about Christian Science, one of the many, is that everybody learns how to become independent of other people for their well-being. No waiting in a doctor's office for hours and hours with, whatever the noise is and the commotion and everything else. You can find it yourself by the serious study of the Bible and science and health. And we tell you exactly how to do it. You have to do it. No one can do it for you. You can go to a Christian Science practitioner and they may heal one problem, but that doesn't heal you. For you to be healed and to become immune to everything, you have to live the life of a true blue Christian Scientist. If you take that step, you will have a life that you never before could dream even of. You couldn't even dream of a life that you can have as a Christian Scientist. I've never been to a doctor for any kind of medical health. I don't have to do it. I never did it. I was very fortunate in that my parents were both Christian Scientists, and our family knew nothing but Christian Science all the time since I was born. And same with my sisters. We are the only family that had perfect attendance all 12 years in school. The whole family. Didn't miss a day. Didn't miss a day. Perfect attendance for 12 years. The whole family. I have three sisters. We were exempted from all the classes that had to do about learning about the body. I don't even know the names of most of the parts inside my skin. I don't know why I need to, why I would need to know. But the less you know about matter or the belief of matter, the more and easier it is to learn about spirit. And spirit is the reality. So why focus on matter? Okay, I got off the track here. I didn't tell you. I told you one thing. You have to have the right attitude, okay? A second thing that is very, very important. You have to live the life of giving. Giving. That's love. Love is giving. You have to live the life of love. You need to constantly be looking for ways to help people. You have to constantly be looking for the needs of other people to see how you can help them solve their problem. I know of a situation where a fella came out of a department store, one of these big super deals where, you know, they sell everything, food and clothes and the whole works, appliances and even motor vehicles, you know, small ones, two-wheeler, motorcycles, motor scooters. And he was approaching his vehicle and somebody came up to him and he was soliciting for money. He said, "Would you give me money so I can buy food?" And instead of just giving him money, he was looking for a solution. He wanted to find out the problem. He said, "Well, what is the problem? Why do you need money to buy food?" So the guy started opening up. He said, "Well," he said, "I lost my job. I didn't think enough ahead to have any money put aside. In a couple of days, I was out of money. And here I am. It's been 2 days since I've eaten." So I wanted to get enough money to buy some food. And the fellow asked him, he said, "Well, what do you do for a living?" "I'm a handyman. I can fix anything. I love working on things to fix them." He says, "I know electrical, plumbing, carpenter, you name it, and I can do it." And the fellow had been accumulating a list of things that needed to be fixed in his home. He said, "I'll tell you what I do." He said, "You follow me up to my house." He said, I don't have any gas." He said, he rode a motorcycle and he said, it's at home. I live about a few blocks from here." He said, "Okay, well, we'll go get it." And he said he had enough gas to get to the gas station. So I said, "Okay, I'll put some gas in your tank for you. And then follow me to my house. I'll show you the list. And if you're confident that you can fix the things on it, we'll start on it and work a day at a time and see how you do." He kept him working for 3 months. They both ended up being very happy, because the one guy could get ahead and get on top of his life, and the other one got his things fixed. The guy was very reasonable with his price, very creative. I know another situation where outside of a grocery store, there was a woman that had her daughter there, and her daughter had no control over her body at all. Couldn't tell who was standing in front of her. Couldn't focus her eyes or head or anything. So the guy gave the mother some money, and he's thinking to himself, how can I help these people? He was a Christian Scientist. So the thought came to him to write up some things and put it on a piece of paper and give it to her. And he said that they spoke a different language, so he had to translate it on the internet. So he gave it to them in their language, put it in some kind of a plastic cover so that the mother could keep it in her purse, folded up. And he went back to see him the next time that he was at the store, I don't know, a week or two later. And she had such a big smile on her face, he said it brought tears to his eyes. And she wanted more. You see, he was thinking about a solution, not just giving her money. Attitude before we begin, as noted, is very important. And along with that, develop a life of giving. Very few people give anything, let alone actually cultivate a whole life with an attitude of giving. So that is a diametric opposite of probably the way you're living. Maybe you're one of those very few exceptional people that really love. I don't mean loving between a man and a wife or parents and their children. I'm talking about just loving. Just loving means that you are looking for ways to help other people solve their problems. Now, money is certainly important because it's a common denominator where it can be utilized, as you know, for almost anything you need to buy. And the Bible says to tithe. That means a tenth part. Now, I consider that as for an average person. Average. Are you a C student? Were you a C student in school, in college? Any professional special courses you took? A C, just average? Is that how you conduct your life, as just being average? Are you just a sheep that follows the crowd? That's average. The average person is a sheep that just follows the crowd. If you want to be above that, you got to be thinking a larger amount than 10%. If you want to be an A student, you got to think a lot more. And if you want to be an A+, you're really giving it. You really got your heart into it. If you want to be able to heal everything, you better be thinking of an A+ student. You've got to give it all. You've got to be one that is desperately looking, earnestly alert to how can you help everyone that you see that is in need. You don't know how to find someone in need? Go down to where the homeless people are. You probably have places in your town or city or county or wherever you are where there's tons of them. Find out what their problem is. Why are they there? You might find someone that is a skilled engineer, went through some kind of a difficult time, and he ended up there. Maybe went down a notch at a time until he's now right at the pit. Maybe he needs a word of encouragement. Who knows? Maybe he can fix anything and can fix anything that you need fixed. Maybe he's a great auto mechanic. He could be an architect. He could be anything. You don't know unless you communicate with him. And you have to use the intelligence of mind all the time with everyone. And you just don't go and do things blindly. Just because the Bible says you're supposed to give a tenth part and you want to be an A-plus student because you want to be able to heal anything, that doesn't mean you just automatically throw money around. I don't care how much money you have. If you're not intelligent with your money, you are not reflecting the intelligence of mind. And sooner or later, you're going to realize that you're making a real big mistake on how you're conducting your life. You've got a lot of things you can give. Everyone does. You may have a lot of money. I know billionaires. They could give away a lot and never miss it. Well, that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about giving what is needed. No one ever has so much money that they can give away whatever they want without needing it. Because if you're a billionaire, there's a billion ways you can give the money away. We have almost an infinite number of ideas on things we want to implement as an institute to help all humanity. We could find a way to productively utilize several billion dollars because we're talking about a world population of 8 billion. If you just devoted $1 to each one, and I'm not saying in money, but, you know, devote it in a productive way. You could easily use up $8 billion. You could use up $80 billion. Give them $10. And we're not talking about just giving money. We're talking about looking for solving problems. And we start at home. Heaven knows the U.S. is in a desperate situation. Desperate. So money. Talent. What are your talents? What are you skilled at doing? What can you do to train other people that need your encouragement and your training and your patience without paying for it? It takes like about 1 second to come up with an idea. I could come up with 60 ideas in a couple of hours. I'm sure you could too. If you really want to give, if you really want to help people solve their problems, it is very easy to think of ways to do it. You have to live a life of giving. Seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all of these things will be added unto you. That's from Matthew 6, from Christ Jesus. So the attitude, life of giving. You have to follow the system. And that takes dedication. Richard Strain, he's an author on our website. He was at the end of his rope, working 18 hours a day, every day. He got home, I don't know, I guess it's probably around midnight or something. And he was out the door at 6 o'clock in the morning. He didn't know what to do to get out of the rut. He wasn't making any progress. Even working those hours, wasn't getting ahead. He went to a Christian Science practitioner, and when he told her that this is what his schedule was, she had one question. When are you studying? When are you studying? When? He said, never. I don't have time to study. When am I going to study? It takes me 18 hours a day to do what I need to do at work. And I've only got a 6-hour turnaround time when I'm home. I'm out at 6 in the morning. She didn't say a word. She just says, when are you studying? And then when he said that, she said, if you're not studying 5 hours a day, you're not going to be able to dig yourself out of the hole. She said nothing else. He sat there and tossed it around, trying to figure out, how in the world can I study even 30 minutes, let alone 5 hours a day? She didn't say a word. She looked him straight in the eye and told him. He realized that he didn't have any other alternative. He knew if there was any way to solve it, it had to be through Christian Science. He just got stuck in his rut and he didn't know what to do. Finally, he said, okay, I'm going to do it. He didn't say, I'm going to try. He didn't say, I'm going to think about it. I'm going to do it. He made a commitment mentally to himself. Whether she was in the room or not wasn't important. He made a commitment to do it. By the end of the week, his schedule had improved so much he had no problem studying 5 hours a day. And it wasn't long before he was invited to speak at churches because of the progress that he had made studying 5 hours a day. We have the complete story about it on our website, in his words. So you have to commit to the study. I mean, if you want to solve problems, you have to live it. You have to live Christian Science. You have to tear it apart. You have to make it your own. If you read a single word that you have even a little bit of doubt about it, if you could find a new angle, new definition on it, look it up. Look it up. Learn how to pronounce it correctly. Look at the derivation. Take it seriously. Do a word study. Look at a thesaurus. Antonyms. Synonyms. How to use it in a sentence besides just the sentence you're reading. We have the tools available today that no one in prior periods of history have had, at least to our knowledge. We give you the complete system and what to do. If you have the right attitude, if you cultivate a total life of giving intelligently, most churches are corrupt. Most non-profit organizations are corrupt. Even the Red Cross. When Clara Barton founded the American Red Cross, it was very useful and valuable. And like I say, I've never relied on medication or going to any kind of a professional, doctor or anybody like that. But the American Red Cross really did some wonderful things. And she was a real champion, Clara Barton. But you ought to read what she said about Mary Baker Eddy. We have it on our website. Read it. So, I would not trust giving my money to anyone except the one that is going to use it. And even in that case, usually money is not the solution. You may have to spend a lot of money to help solve their problem, but giving them the money is probably not as useful as you spending it yourself to make sure they have what they need. So you're not going to save money by the method I'm describing, but you're going to make it much, much more effective. And that's what you need to do. So if you do those three things, develop the right attitude, develop the life of giving, and devote the time that is necessary to really dig in, like your life depends on it, which it does. If you don't have a life of the kind of thing I'm describing, you don't have a life. You have some kind of a temporary up and down, in and out, going around in circles. If you will do those three things, you will have a life of success and fulfillment that is beyond what you could ever conceive of otherwise. We know how to do it. And also, I didn't even mention this, but you will be protected. Protected. What do I mean by that? If you're in a hazardous situation, you will develop your understanding so you will be protected from being involved in the problem. Let the storm roar without me. I know of a woman that lived in Southern California where they had fire that destroyed all the homes around her. Fire department tried everything in the world to get her to leave. And she wouldn't do it. She said, no, I know how to protect myself. I know how to protect my home. And it's not going to be touched. You go ahead and take care of everyone else. Her home was not touched. Not a blade of grass was charred by the fire. I talked to her in person after this was all over. She happened to be visiting a place where there was a group of Christian Scientists that were meeting. And I knew a couple of people there and they invited me. And she came. And it became known that she had just experienced what I told you. And so she gave all the details. We can develop that kind of confidence but it has to be cultivated. It's not a miracle, it has to be cultivated. A lot of hard work. And what do I mean by that? The hardest thing is giving up your belief that matter and brain are the controllers of your life and other people, doctors, dentists, whatever. You can have a life independent of what everyone thinks is standard procedure. You don't have to go to a dentist for the well-being of your teeth. You don't have to go to an optometrist. Everything can be worked out. I visited a church one time, and there was a lady that was definitely in what is considered golden years. And I noticed that she didn't have any trouble at all reading the text of hymns when we sang it. And she didn't wear glasses. She didn't hold it close to her face or anything. Normal distance. She had perfect vision. I'm sure based on the calendar, she would have been considered to be at least 80 years old. Maybe 85. And I told her it was wonderful that she did not need to wear any glasses, and she had what looked like totally normal vision. She said one thing. I keep after it. That's what we have to do. That's what the scientific statement is all about. Scientific statement of being. That is a statement that tells us where the truth is and where the mistake is. It's our choice. Our choice. I am extremely grateful for every single individual that I've learned from through either personal conversation or reading publications, listening to audios. Any kind of media that has been used, I'm so grateful for everyone that has contributed to the universal thought of truth so that we can all reflect that individually and we can add to that universal thought so that it can benefit everyone that tunes in. I'm so grateful for the opportunities that Christian scientists have had over the years of being able to be exempt from being pressured into medical things, particularly when you can exempt yourself from all those classes in school where they teach everything that tries to capture your thought about the need for this and that and so forth to maintain good health. And of course, the people that really stand out are Christ Jesus and Paul, Mary Baker Eddy. Some of the ones I've mentioned here that are outstanding Christian scientists. There's many others. If you click on the recommended links in the website, you will find others listed. We have over 100 authors. I will close by reading a short treatment by Mary Baker Eddy entitled Diapason of Heaven, with a focus on mind. The real Christian Scientist is constantly accentuating harmony in word and deed, mentally and orally, perpetually repeating this diapason of heaven. Good is my God, and my God is good. Love is my God, and my God is love. We can declare often, divine mind is my mind, and my mind is God. God is my mind, and my mind is good. I have an intelligent mind, a good mind, a wise, perceptive, discerning mind, a clear mind, a joyous, happy mind. Mind is God. All acting, all wise, all loving, all knowing, all seeing. Divine mind is enthroned in my consciousness. Mortal mind and matter and personal sense are not enthroned. Ignorance and apathy and materiality are not enthroned in my consciousness. Good is my mind, and my mind is good. Mind is my God, and my mind is good. Divine mind is enthroned. This is the Word of God. We have to change the subjective thinking we have of these seven names for personal sense to spiritual sense, and see ourselves and others as spiritual individualities, not personalities. This way is the only way. It is the way the Bible characters walked with God and ascended. Amen.